So we have to depend on the advancement of our spiritual life through Yuga Dharma. So that becomes the principal means, and of course we can try to adjust whatever we can or save whatever we can from that system and implement it. But nevertheless, the main principle here is the Yuga Dharma, which is Nam Sankirtan, chanting the name of Krishna. So with that means, somehow or other, we can counteract all the miseries, even if we cannot create a perfect political system in this age. Another question?
Maharaj, in relation to the markings of the body that you mentioned at the beginning of the class, how do we understand the tattoos?
How do we understand it?
Tattoos,
how are they markings? They're definitely the markings, but they're not standard markings, as we know. They were the modern equivalent of tilak, I guess. But all done haphazardly, and with everyone inventing their own signs and what it means. So it's like, and of course everybody has very strange concepts of who they are and what they want to be, so therefore it's very arbitrary symbolism, whatever. Huh? We do know that like people in prisons and army and sailors, usually that was their thing before, you know? But now it's spread throughout society, so maybe everybody's taking the same mentality of displaying their mental attachments on their body. So the ones we have in the Vedic system were related to their varnas and the occupations, etc., and to their spiritual group or whatever. So we have Shivais and Vishnu worshippers, or worshippers of Suryadeva or Ganesh, and they all had the particular types of tilak. So that was, we could say, at least it was regulated by Vedic standards and ultimately leading to spiritual life. But now it's like non-spiritual markings.
Apart from the, apart from the Ramanujas, their brand, but in the Vedic culture, was there an instance of actual tattoos like they're doing now?
I don't see any mention of it. No. It's quite common though in quite a lot of civilizations of the world. They do it. Primitive societies or whatnot, they do it also. So it's there, but among the Vaishnavas, I've never seen that mentioned as a thing. Of course, they could say one of the angas of bhakti is to write the names of the Lord on your body. So this is the more permanent way of doing it, I suppose. But other than that, they don't get into it too much. That we could say is the markings, the tapa, the shankha and chakra on your shoulders would be the Vaishnava equivalent of the tattoo, I suppose. They mark your body with the brands.
You're talking about knowing what one's duty is. So we have the example of Daksha. He was empowered as a Prajapati to populate the universe within his wife. Narada Muni preached to them and they become sannyasis. So then again, another 10,000 sons again. Narada Muni preached and become sannyasi. So could we say this was like irresponsible of Narada Muni? They were meant to become grihasas, populate the universe to help their father, but Narada Muni sort of preached detachment. So how do I understand?
Well, we'll have to see actually what was the qualification. Did they survive? Those who became sannyasis, did they survive? They were qualified. So we could say that perhaps they understood their qualification, therefore he advised that, and therefore it was improper for Daksha to interfere with that if they were qualified for renunciation. But as I said, that the sons of Bharat, some became sages, some became, Kshatriyas or whatever, like that. Some became Brahman according to their qualification or whatever, and they were satisfied with that. Of course, the renounced ashram is a little more strict. Less people are qualified than that. A Brahmin, no problem. A Brahmin or a sage can also be a grihasta. But then to become renounced is more, elevated or more difficult also. So therefore, the Brahmins are only allowed to, the Kshatriyas don't take sannyas. They're not qualified. They got some rajas, too much rajas in them by nature, so they cannot do it.
And what to speak of Vaishyas and Sudras, they cannot do it. So it's just out of the question for them. So only some Brahmanas will take to the sannyas. So it's quite a select group there. Right? So very few people are qualified for that.
You were quoting from Bhaktivinoda Thakur about the Balashrams.
Yes.
And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you explained Bhaktivinoda Thakur said it's a perfect system, and if we follow it properly, we'll get good results.
Yeah.
So what was his idea of the manifestation of that in the present day and age?
He doesn't give a solution because he was living under the British. I don't know if you can actually publicly state in his books, let's overthrow the British and put an Indian king on the throne. He couldn't do that. His only solution was at least we can determine Varna by qualification, not by birth. So he says the father, the relatives, the leaders of the community, etc., when the child is grown up more or less, like 17 years old, then they will discuss and they'll look at his qualities and see which is his suitable occupation. And then that will be his occupation. And they'll decide like that.
But like with the current environment, how do you actually implement something like, this seems like a very limited implementation.
Go into the details of how we could implement Varnashram system again in the modern world. That was just one of his suggestions to rectify it. But obviously, we need a whole political system, and that we don't know how that's going to operate. And he didn't mention anything about that. What to do when there's no king, and how to implement a Varnashram system without a king. He didn't.
So it would seem that essentially he was presenting an ideal, rather than saying it was practical in the modern day.
Yeah. But it looks obvious since there is no king, the king is very essential in that system, and he's not appointed by anyone as such. He comes in a hereditary line, empowered by the Lord. So we're not in control of that. I think the last person, Devapti or something, is the one, the last descendant. He went up to the Kalapa ground in the Himalayas, and he's sitting there, and he won't come out until Satyayuga. So we're stuck in that one sense. So the alternative is that we can take parts of that system and try to use it for our benefit as Vaishnavas. That much we can do, which we do already. Cleanliness things, rules like that. Some of the social rules we take from Varnashram, we try to use those within our own society as well.
Hare Krishna. I'm just wondering if we know at what point the Varnashram system came dependent on birth rather than qualification, and what the factors were that caused that change.
Yeah, well, it's a mixture. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that the primary thing is guna and karma and whatever, and svabhav. So the action is dependent upon the qualities and nature of the person. Huh? Now, according to birth, majority, as I say, we could predict their qualities because of their father and mother. Father and mother, one nature, the children will likely be of that nature. Not always so, but let's say 80%, maybe. At least not 10%, at least maybe 80% or 90%. Plus, if the parents are doing their proper duties, like the Brahmana, their family is doing brahminical duties, and they're raised in that environment, the children, again, are likely to become brahminical. Not just the birth, the hereditary factors, but the upbringing. So if those things come out, then naturally they would come up brahminical. So based on that, then it became an automatic thing. Okay, they're born like this is brahmana, okay, they're brahmanas like that. That was how it came out. But it's not an absolute thing. Sometimes we'll see in Brahmin family, both parents are nice and qualified, but the children come out quite different. So we can't force them to be brahmanas and do the brahmana work. So when we do that, they're not brahminical, and they're trying to do the brahmanical work, they fail. They're not interested in doing it. They won't learn the Vedas. They won't understand the real deep meaning of the Vedas. So, they'll be a disgrace to the brahminical community. So the original system was, logical and, had some flexibility, but when it was only based on birth, then it became a problem. And it created a lot of dissatisfaction because people were stuck in a particular varnas, and they get exploited by the higher varnas. So therefore, they became very disturbed and they started revolting or whatever.
So would we say that it became corrupt with the advent of Kali Yuga? I'm guessing in the other three yugas, Varnashram was mostly intact.
Yeah. So because of Kali Yuga, then people more or less have more self-interest. So each Varna has its self-interest, and particularly the Brahmanas are on top, so they want to keep their top position. So and therefore, they'll encourage the birthright system. By birth, and keep their family intact all the time.
Yeah, you mentioned how in Kali Yuga, because Shudras are in charge of society, then the earth is very polluted.
Yeah, or so the Vaishyas may be in charge also, we don't know.
Vaishyas.
In a rare case, maybe a Kshatriya who's in charge, maybe a Kshatriya also, but very rarely.
So would you say that pollution and contributing to pollution is totally in the mode of Tamagun?
Tamagun and Rajagun, because Rajagun means own profit. So the leader will strive for his own profit more than anything else. And therefore, he'll compromise, you know, whether if it's not good for the environment, but we make profit out of it, then he'll say, okay, let's do it because we make profit, even if we're going to destroy all the trees or we're going to pollute the water, we'll do it anyway. Yeah? Or we'll find companies basically, many are profit-oriented. Yeah? So therefore, they'll try to make profit, even if they pollute the environment or whatever like that. And if somebody objects, they may somehow hush it up or whatever like this, silence those people by some means or other, or cover it up, whatever, because they're making profit. So their profit is more than their interest in preserving the earth and long-term plans for, you know, humanity, etc.
Because it looks like they're not even thinking of their own profit, because even if they have a lot of money, they can't really enjoy it because the air is polluted, the earth is polluted.
Well, they can buy an airplane and run off to another country that has no pollution, maybe. but we see it's commonly done. And we see that there's all these environmental things about pollution and control of chemicals and stuff. They have all these meetings, but many of the countries won't say, yes, we will control our factories and not put out so much bad chemicals. They won't do it. They won't sign the treaty. Why? Because industry in their country will not support the government, and then the water powers, they can't support it because the financial thing of the companies is behind the government pushing them.
So would you say that devotees who don't see the link between Krishna consciousness or Bhakti Yoga and being environmentally aware is a lack of knowledge? Because sometimes so many devotees are like, oh, that's just, you know.
Oh, well, actually the devotee, if we look at the qualities of the devotee, he has to have a very broad vision of, you know, life and earth, etc., and give respect to everyone. So here we have the example of the cow and the bull, and the you know, suitors beating the cow and the bull. So obviously, you know, that's wrong. Bhagavan is pointing out this is condemned. So therefore, the devotees also have to give respect to all life. That's one of the principles, even in the Angas of Bhakti and the Nectar Devotion. That we don't interfere with any life form. We don't disturb other living energies as much as possible. So if we are disturbing the earth and creating all sorts of problems in the environment, we're obviously really disturbing all other living entities. So we have to be very careful of that.
And we're not setting the example either, isn't it? Because even if we protect the cows and then we pollute and we use the environment,
so we have to. We try on all levels, always, and not just the cows, the other animals as well, and the plants as well.
Yeah. Thank you.